Hi there, and welcome to Live from the Cyber Institute. In this podcast, we listen in on conversations taking place among ministers, church leaders, and scholars as we engage the issues facing Christians and church leaders today. We hope that this episode is thought-provoking and a blessing to you, because as with everything we do in the Cyber Institute, our mission is to equip church leaders and help churches thrive. After you listen, make sure to follow our podcast so that you get all the latest episodes from your podcast platform of choice. Let's get started. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Live from the Seibert Institute, the podcast out of ACU's Seibert Institute for Church Ministry. My name is David Knipe. I'm the Associate Director of the Seibert Institute, and very glad that you're with us today. Our podcast focuses on a variety of contemporary issues facing churches and church leaders. Sometimes we zero in on topics church leaders face within the church office. We have covered matters like conflict communication among leaders, challenges that churches have in finding ministers to hire, and ministry residencies as a form of apprenticeship. And today, we are going to talk about another of these very important topics, and that is sabbaticals for ministers. And so I'm really glad you're joining us. Today, I'm getting to visit with Sierra Gustafson and Anna Moser, two children's ministers in Churches of Christ. Welcome, y'all. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks.
All right. Well, I want to let y'all introduce yourselves. Tell us where you are, how long you've been in ministry, and how long you've been at your respective churches. We'll just kind of talk freely as we go, but we'll start alphabetically this time. So, Anna, why don't you get us started, and Sierra, introduce yourself to us as well.
Okay. I'm Anna Moser, and I currently am the children's minister at Sycamore View Church of Christ in Memphis, Tennessee. I've been here almost 8 years. And I've been in full-time children's ministry almost 12.
Okay, great. Sierra, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, so I grew up in Greenville, Texas, at a small church, Johnson Street Church of Christ. And I think the funny thing about children's ministers is a lot of us have been in ministry a long time. I grew up doing children's ministry. I think our youth group kind of thought I was a nuisance. And so immediately I got plugged into little kids classes and different things like that and doing VBS. And I was surrounded by some of the most awesome and supportive members because of that. I went on to go to Oklahoma Christian. I started out as a nursing major and I spent a summer in Newport, Arkansas doing inner city ministry. Okay. And just really fell in love with that. And that kind of just started, hey, maybe I can be a children's minister. Maybe there's something different. And that was a year in 2012 that Oklahoma Christian was starting their children's ministry program. And so that's kind of really dived into my passion and kind of how I got started and where I'm at. And so I've been at Levy for 8 years. And prior to that, I was assisting some churches in Oklahoma City before I found my current spot.
Okay, well, wonderful. Well, as I mentioned today, we're going to talk about sabbaticals in ministry. And I've got to be honest, I'm really glad to have found out that both of y'all have recently experienced a sabbatical. And part of the reason, not just for you personally, I'm glad that you got to experience that, but also I feel like a lot of times in churches, sabbatical conversations are often about preachers, and it's sort of a preachers and elders, and we don't often think about the need for staff ministers as well. And so this is going to be a really important, I think, addition to that conversation. But to give us some context there, would you mind just kind of telling us about your recent sabbatical, right? Just give us kind of the nuts and bolts. How long did it last? And what were some of the main things that you did during that time?
So for me, I kind of took it out of necessity.
Okay.
I'd had a really hard year in 23 and 24. And so through that, I was just really struggling. And I was reaching out to a lot of my minister support systems, just saying, hey, this is what's going on. Here's what I'm struggling. And through that, several of them recommended Ruth Haley Barton. And so I had started really diving into her book, Invitation to Solitude and Silence. And I was starting to add that into my practice. But I think at that point where I was, I just needed a hard stop. Mm-hmm. And I knew that mentally, but I just hadn't quite figured out how to do that or what that looked like. And the one thing I kept telling myself, so one of the slowest times in ministry for me is September. I was like, okay, I can just make it to September if I can just do that. But then in July, unexpectedly, I lost my brother. And so that kind of sent me, I don't know, just at a spot of where I just need to have some hard conversations. And so I just sat down with my eldership and I was like, hey, here's what's going on. This is what I would like to have. I would love to have a sabbatical. And they were really supportive in that decision. So that's what it looked like for me. It was kind of out of necessity.
Yeah, makes sense. Anna, what was it like for you? Tell us about kind of how it got going, how long it lasted, et cetera.
Yeah, my church has a sabbatical policy. And so I had 6 weeks of a sabbatical and I've been looking forward to it since I started kind of thinking, will I really make it at a church for 7 years? And I have. So it was really exciting. I am single. And I don't have a family here in Memphis. And so when I thought about 6 weeks alone here, that kind of scared me a little bit. So I planned a lot of trips, kind of took advantage of the fact that I don't have anything tying me here for those 6 weeks. So I did a lot of traveling. I spent about a week at a lake house by myself because I wanted that solitude and silence, like in nature and in a different environment than I'm used to. And then I went on a big 2-week trip to Greece and Italy, kind of a bucket list thing for me. Got to visit some missionaries that I know over there in both places. That was really special. And then I spent about a week visiting family and friends. And in Texas, I went to ACU and I hadn't really been back on campus and meeting with some mentors since I graduated, really. So I went back to Abilene and to Austin to spend time with family. And then the last week I was just here in Memphis and I kind of wanted to get back in the groove of things. So I audited a class at Harding School of Theology that was on spiritual formation of children with Dr. Holly Allen and Harold Shank. And that was a really special way to kind of wrap things up for me.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of the kind of use sort of the blend that there was some element of retreat. There was some fellowship time. There was some travel, but also some equipping as well. And we're going to talk a little bit later about kind of things that y'all would recommend to others as they're thinking about, you know, how do I spend this time? And the language that I was using here at the beginning was that you got to experience a sabbatical. But the way both of you described it was that this was something your church leaders granted you. And I think that matches the way I hear churches typically talk about sabbaticals, right? Maybe we use the language of taking one, but really the way it usually works functionally is a sabbatical is given to us. But that said, churches do things differently. And so, Anna, you mentioned that at Sycamore View, y'all have a sabbatical policy. I don't know if that's always been the case or if there's some history there. And I'd just be curious to hear y'all reflect on, is it a policy thing? Is it informal? Sierra, you talked about going to them and asking. I don't know if that was something that was on the horizon and it needed to just move up. But what does that look like in terms of sort of the governance at your church?
Yeah, I'll start. Our sabbatical policy is that after 7 years, you get a 6-week sabbatical. Okay. And this is for all of our full-time ministers. And then every 4 years after that, you get a 4-week sabbatical.
Okay.
And that was in place long before I got here. I don't remember the exact year that started, but it's just been really neat because I've gotten to see a lot of my coworkers go on sabbaticals during those 7 years and kind of hear about their experiences. And our church is just really familiar with the idea of sabbatical because That's we have good. That policy in place. And so it's just built into kind of our DNA of who we are.
Yeah, I would imagine that, you know, there's always going to be conversations that need to happen with, especially in a children's ministry context, with your volunteers, with your teachers. But the fact that the church is already familiar with that probably at least smoothed out what those conversations might have looked like, even if you had to kind of work out some particulars. Sierra, is it that way for y'all or is it different at Levy?
We don't have any policies in place for it yet. It's conversations that we're having and we're working through, but it was in our language. In 2020, our preaching minister, he was supposed to go on a sabbatical, but then that kind of got interrupted and he never ended up taking that necessarily. And so it was in our language and I knew our eldership was familiar with, but it was something that I was comfortable with asking. You know, our staff constantly talks about finding that elder that you can, you know, be in relationship with and that they can, you know what's going on. And so I had that. And so it felt comfortable to go sit down and just have that conversation. And then I wasn't afraid to be, you know, right or wrong. I'm not sure. I was blunt. I was like, hey, here's, you know, what's going on. If I continue without this break, you probably will be looking for a new children's minister soon, you know? And that was really, I think, harsh, and that had them all stop and think about it, but it got their attention just to know how serious I was. And so I don't know, that's part of my personality. I'm an honest person, but I felt comfortable in that setting talking with them. But having those relationships is really important.
Yeah. Well, and I recognize with my position in kind of lots of places of privilege as far as white, male, educated, all that. But what I hear from some of my sisters who are in leadership, that sometimes women in ministry have to be blunter than they would like, or maybe blunter than they might be afraid their people want them to be. And so I'm glad that you had the willingness to do that. It sounds like it was exactly what was needed, but that's what I hear. That's what I hear.
Yeah. I would say it's really hard, but I encourage, you know, people to do that because it's, I don't know, there's a lot of different things to go in there. You know, it's hard. I have to initiate a lot of, I don't know if it's the same way with Anna, but I feel like I have to initiate a lot of like the lunches and, you know, meeting with the elders and different things like that. And for me, that's awkward because I feel like it should just happen naturally, but I end up having to initiate all that. But I think that's just an important part of our relationships and something that I just have to, you know, just kind of, it is how it is right now. And, you know, anyway.
Yeah. No. That's when I first heard somebody talk about, you know, what's often called the Billy Graham rule. It was one of those, I was a young male minister and I thought that makes a ton of sense. And then in talking with sisters who were in ministry, I learned from their perspective that that often means getting shut out of conversations, that things that might happen maybe a little more organically, if they were male, it'd be easy to just go out for coffee, go out for lunch. If it's just you and one leader or elder, that there can be a hesitancy on the part of the male, maybe out of good intentions, but then it ends up causing trouble. And so I suspect that you're not alone. That would be my hunch. Okay, so Sierra, this is actually one that you already kind of touched on, but kind of a follow-up in terms of how this works in church life, right? Policy is one part of it, but calendar is another part. How did you decide when to take your sabbatical? Like, was it in something having to do with the church calendar or just the year? Like, what are some of the factors that played in? Like I said, Sierra, you've already begun to address that some, and so feel free to add more. And Anna, I'd love to hear kind of what that looked like for you.
Yeah, I'll go. I knew that 2023 was going to be my year. So I, in 2022, just kind of paid attention to how busy different seasons are because I knew summer was out the window. There's just no way I could take off 6 weeks in the summer. Sure. But in 2022, I noticed same month that Sierra mentioned of September, like once all the summer stuff has gotten wrapped up, and I have volunteers in place for the school year, that it was just a slower month kind of before all of the holiday events and things ramp up again. So I just knew that that would be a good time. And we had one other minister that was also going on sabbatical in the same year, which isn't ideal. We try not to do that, but it just worked out that way this time. And so we coordinated so that we wouldn't overlap and we would have some time to be back together before he went on a sabbatical too. So
I hear you saying there was some work that was around making sure your ministry systems were in place, also some coordination among the staff members as well. Was that something that you then also needed to bring elders in, or does it tend to be more, no, as long as y'all work it out on the staff, you just kind of inform eldership and they roll with that?
Yeah, as long as we work it out as the staff, that's kind of been in our policy. Okay. And we try to do that a year in advance so that they kind of know going into January who's going on sabbatical when during that year. So it's not, doesn't sneak up on the elders or our church.
Did you have any coordination that you needed to do with fellow people, or was because of the urgency of it, was it like, nope, if everybody's in agreement, this is what we're doing?
Yeah. It worked out as a staff, you know, September is a slower month. We had a lot of things in October, but honestly, it just worked out among our staff where that was okay. So I asked for it the beginning of August. And so I had like a good month. I mean, it's not as nice as like Anna, where you have a year to look at it, but that's a month of, you know, planning on my end. And already it's kind of like a Sabbath. I treat September like a Sabbath month for me in children's ministry. I intentionally don't plan a ton of things just because it's a good, nice breaking point. You know, summer has just ended. You know, August, you've worked through some of those things. And then, you know, you've got, I don't know, the fall is just easier. It's things that always happen. And this is what it looks like. And so it's nothing just huge and crazy. You've been in ministry for a while. So, and I have been, you know, you have systems in place of what that looks like. Our fall things don't take a lot of planning. So I don't know. It worked out really well. And as a staff, everyone was supportive in planning that and making it happen. There was still a lot of things behind the scenes of getting volunteers ready, you know, for me not to be there. But.
Absolutely. Well, and that's, I mean, that definitely, I think, would be something that we would want anybody who's listening, if they're anticipating a sabbatical or wanting to be able to do one, right? I mean, to pay attention to the rhythms, because I would imagine a large part of the success of a sabbatical is going to be related to where is it in the rhythm of your own life, whether it's in terms of the steady things, or Sierra, like you've shared, some of the kind of acute things that sometimes pop up, but also just what are the rhythms of church life? You want it to be something that's going to be life-giving, even though there is disruption. Hopefully it's good and productive and beneficial disruption and not something that's going to derail things. Well, something y'all have already begun to talk about that I think is important, again, for our listeners, is the reality that preparation is part of the deal. And I've heard ministers say sometimes that getting ready for the sabbatical can actually be one of the challenges. Annie, you already kind of alluded to that to some degree. Thinking ahead, especially in, you know, some ministry areas where it's every week, go. There's always something happening. And to have this long time off, it can be sort of weird to think, how am I going to fill this? So would you mind sharing with us some of the things that you did in preparation for your sabbatical? And like, how did you know or decide to do those things? Were they things that just came to you? Was it in conversation with others?
For me, I already felt like I had a little bit of practice, because when you go on maternity leave, it's a very similar situation of preparing for what this is, what it looks like without, you know, me. But it is still different in a sabbatical, and, you know, everyone's different. Anna didn't go, you know, to her church, you know, she kind of stepped back and did other things. Whereas I needed my church family, because I was grieving and I was hurting. And so I didn't necessarily feel like I needed to withdraw, but the church needed to understand that I wasn't working at the same time, you know? Yep. And so lots of conversation happened before, you know, it's, you know, the elders approved it. So then I went to my children's ministry team and I talked to them. It was kind of unfortunate, at the same time that I was going on sabbatical, one of my deacons announced that him and his family were moving. And so, you know, it was like one of those points when you like, you're planning and you're like, all right, can't happen. I'm going to just have to wait till next year. But the volunteers that came and stepped up during that time to not only cover, you know, the things that I do, but also to cover the things he had been doing in ministry, you know, it was a big deal, and it was humbling. One of my kids' biological moms, something that she always said that I've just kind of stuck with me is let go and let God. And that's a very humbling thing, because that's exactly what you're doing in these moments. You know, I'm a type 8 control type person in the Enneagram. And so that's what I had been doing all this time, you know, controlling, not letting God take his part. And so it's a very humbling experience to just be like, you know what, I'm going to let go of this and God's got it. And that's exactly what happened. We had lots of volunteers step up and take spots, and, you know, he's got good things in plan. He has people that he wants to use. Sometimes we just have to stop and look. And so that's kind of honestly what a sabbatical allowed to happen, is to let Sierra stop controlling the little things and find other people who had interest, but maybe never spoke up about it, you know, or find, you know, different people. And so it was really neat to see our church family come together and surround around that.
Yeah. I had not thought about the story in the Old Testament of the giving of the manna, right? Think about sabbatical, and we'll talk some about kind of Sabbath, but I don't know that I've ever been real sympathetic to the people who were trying to hoard manna, right? But as you're describing that, like, it makes total sense. I mean, when he said, okay, now on the seventh day, right, it's not going to come, that had to produce some anxiety for people. But from just saying, no, it's going to be okay. God will provide. Hopefully pretty quickly they got there, but that first time, man, that would be difficult. Yeah. Thanks, Sierra. Anna, what about you?
Yeah. I relate a lot to the anxiety just mentioned because going into it, I was doing so much planning because I'm just like a planner. But then as it got closer and closer, I just got kind of panicky because we're just talking about Enneagram. I'm an Enneagram 2. And they always say that Enneagram 2 question is, who am I when no one needs me? And for, over a decade, I've been a children's minister, kind of my main personality trait, I feel like, and who I identify as, and meeting needs of families and coworkers and the church all around me. I don't know, like, what was he going to reveal to me when I'm really, truly alone? And so that was kind of scary. So I got a spiritual director, and that was really helpful. I had seen several of my coworkers do that, and I'd never gone to a spiritual director before, but I'm really glad that I did. I met with her about 3 times before the sabbatical, because that's really when I was hitting a kind of identity crisis, maybe. And then I met with her, I think, 2 times during my sabbatical and then a couple of times after. And that was just really helpful to have somebody guide me through what spiritual disciplines do I want to implement while I'm on my sabbatical, and different prayer practices and different things like that. So that was really helpful. And then I also read another Ruth Haley Barton plug here in the podcast. Mm-hmm. We're both big fans. I read Embracing Rhythms of Work and Rest from Sabbath to Sabbatical and Back Again is kind of the tagline. And that book was so helpful because it made me realize how much I need to even just practice Sabbath more in my life. And there's even like questions and good guides about how to plan for your sabbatical and how to get into it and how to come out of it. So that book was a really helpful guide for me almost the whole year of my sabbatical to kind of prep, and then at the end of it to kind of look back on it.
That's great. I am loving the variety of things that y'all are saying, right? That there are resources that are in books. There are resources that are in colleagues, right? Watching and hearing the stories of others, seeing the things that are in yourself, but then also just the things that are in your particular context, because everybody's context is going to be a little different. And I wanted to follow up with you about something in that way specifically. Y'all have both already talked some about what the preparation for the sabbatical looked like, but I'm curious, since you're both in children's ministry, how did you talk to people like volunteers, parents, and kids about this? Like, I would like to think that fellow staff members would kind of understand, elders hopefully understand, but if you're talking to like your kids in your ministry, it's not just that you're going on vacation. It's not just that you're taking a few weeks off. This is part of your ministry, just in a different way. So what did those conversations look like as you were explaining and trying to kind of help them understand?
So for me, I really laid it down to like who to talk to, like who's responsible for this, who's responsible for that. So I laid it out so parents knew if they had a question about LTC, this is who I go to. If I have a question about our elementary classes, this is who I go to. And I think that helps our parents and volunteers out a lot. I already have a really good children's ministry team in place, and so that helps. They already go to a lot of those people instead of always coming to Sierra about different things, but just reiterating that to parents, so they know who to go to and who to talk to. As far as kids, we did a church announcement, which it felt really awkward in my opinion, but I think that helped a lot of the kids and different things like that. And they're pretty understanding. There is a group of people that I really pour into and mentor a lot. And I just asked them to pray for me. I was like, here's the things that I want you to pray with for me about. Here's what I'm struggling with. And they understood that, and they took that. And every once in a while, I'd get a few text messages about, hey, I'm praying. Here's my prayer for you, and different things like that. And that meant a lot. But, bringing those students along with me really helped in that, and helped them understand what was happening.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, we have a family meeting for parents every January and like end of August. And so my last Sunday on here at Sycamore View before my sabbatical, I had a family meeting. And the main point of that one was just like you were saying, Sierra, spelling out who's going to be the point person for all these different things. And our executive minister was in there again to kind of reiterate why we do sabbatical for any people that are new and don't really understand it. So that was a good conversation to have, and they could kind of know who to talk to. I have a very part-time nursery coordinator, so she took on a few more tasks, and then I recruited other volunteers to cover the other gaps. And then with the kids, leading up to it, I tried to talk a lot about Sabbath and why it's important to rest and what rest looks like. And so I just tried to frame it in that conversation a lot of, I'm going to get to have 6 weeks of just these different forms of rest, and rest isn't always just taking naps. Rest can be doing things you really love doing and being around people that give you life. And so I was able to kind of explain that to them. And then what was really sweet is the Sunday before I left, they prayed over me as a church. And that was a really powerful, I was crying, of course, but my personal shepherd had like all the kids stand up that had been in my children's ministry and all the volunteers and parents and my small group. And it just was like just a really beautiful picture for me going into my sabbatical of how many people I have behind me and encouraging me and praying for me. So that was really a powerful experience. And I think too, just the recruiting volunteers, I think it was good for them. And like my nursery coordinator, she came out of that when I came back of like, I want to do more. Like give me more things to do. And I'm trying to once a month, not do children's worship and not do some of the things that I usually was doing before my sabbatical, because I found people that really did enjoy doing some of those things that I just keep on my plate. So that was a blessing coming out of it. Was realizing that there are other people that want to keep doing some of those things to give me more margin.
Yeah, that's great. So something we had talked about in our preliminary conversation, I want to come to here because multiple times so far in our conversation, the idea of Sabbath has come up. You know, we know that sabbaticals aren't just a month off, 6 weeks off. We want this to have ongoing importance for people beyond the sabbatical. And one of you said to me as we were preparing for this, that a question you asked yourself was, how can I turn a sabbatical into an ongoing practice of Sabbath? And so I'd love to hear y'all just reflect some on how you see Sabbath and sabbatical being related to one another, both in terms of preparation, but also just kind of on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, that's been a huge thing for me as I was getting ready for my sabbatical, because I didn't really have any regular practices of Sabbath. And so I thought how 6 weeks from my social media and all these things that take up so much of my time, and how can I truly rest for that amount of time? And so I tried to really take my Fridays, which we get Fridays and Saturdays off, but I found myself even on Fridays just being lazy, which is, I think, different than resting. And so they're laziness and resting, but binging shows and, you know, doing that kind of thing isn't necessarily restorative rest, I guess. And right. So I tried to kind of figure out what things I want to do on those Fridays. And that was really helpful for me in thinking about the whole 6 weeks. What are those rhythms that give me life, that help me reconnect to God and to people around me and things around me? So John Mark Comer, his resources on Sabbath were really helpful. Podcasts, Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. But his four main things are stop, rest, delight, and worship when it comes to Sabbath. And I think I just knew about the stop part and resting, but I hadn't thought about like, what things do I delight in? And I'm a really like crafty, artsy person. So I wanted to do some painting and crafty projects on my Fridays when I Sabbath. And I also love music. So I made like a sabbatical playlist that now is like my Friday playlist. And just those songs I listened to every day on my sabbatical, like when I'm feeling in a funk, I can pull up those songs and start listening to them again. And they kind of take me back to that place. And that was really helpful. And I made a book of pictures from my sabbatical, just like one picture a day. And looking through that book is helpful to me too now on Fridays, because I think just I'm not always going to get, you know, the full 6 weeks, but I can do a day a week where, or at least half a day a week. Like, it doesn't have to be very like legalistic or perfect, but what things can easily reconnect me to some of those experiences I had during the longer sabbatical. Another thing too was I rememorized the Sermon on the Mount at ACU. I was in Randy Harris's class, and we memorized the Sermon on the Mount. And I hadn't really gone back to it and tried to see if I could do it again. And so I thought, you know, my sabbatical, that'll be a really good time to recommit that to memory. And that was just a really sweet place for me and God. And now that's like, you know, when I'm on walks, I'm thinking through the Sermon on the Mount again. So just ways to connect my sabbatical time to my, I guess, ordinary time, and even like a one day a week more intentional time of rest has been really beautiful.
That's great. Sierra, what about you? How would you make that connection with Sabbath and sabbatical?
Yeah. So I think for me, my biggest struggle that I've been thinking about and reflecting on, you know, before I even started my sabbatical, is we see so many of our peers, you know, or other ministers who leave ministry just suddenly, you know, and I didn't want that to be me, but that was quickly starting to feel like that was about to be me. So, you know, that's kind of what I was reaching out to my other, you know, friends and ministers about, like, hey, what do you guys do to, you know, protect that, to put that, you know, in place. And so that's, you know, started back on Ruth Haley Barton and her books, but she talks a lot about that, you know, and that needing that Sabbath time, you know. And so I was trying to do that, but I really didn't feel like I could do that until I had that sabbatical time. But since coming out of my sabbatical, so I've, you know, like Anna said, just been really intentional about setting aside that time. And so unfortunately, I don't get an entire day off on Friday. I just have a half a day. That I'm not afraid to use some of my work time to have those quiet moments with God, to have those silent moments. So I usually try to make that my first part of the mornings when I get into the office. You know, I keep my door shut, usually have the lights out, and that's just my quiet time, my silent time with God. And I really think that's really neat. You know, Anna's talked several times about this playlist that she has, and I just love that. And I was like, oh, I wish I had thought of something like that. That's a good idea. But I kind of did have that triggering. So for me, it was a candle. Like, I always lit like a candle before I started my time. And that's one of those things that's kind of brought me back into those moments that triggered, you know, what my Sabbath looked like for me, and kind of drawing into the presence of God. Is the candle really signified that for me? Feels a little bit strange, I feel like, in the Church of Christ kind of world, but that just kind of helps set aside that moment and just kind of set it apart. And that's something I've used to kind of trigger that memory. And then, like I said, just being really intentional about setting time. And so I try to do that the start of my work day. Part of my Fridays, I try to use as that. The thing is, you're not going to always be perfect about it. You know, you're going to mess up from time to time, but trying to reflect back into that and trying to have people who can hold you accountable to that, I think, is really important. And so finding a trusted group of people that can just kind of help you bring back into that presence.
Yeah, no, I love the ideas y'all are sharing, because I mean, you're pointing to just the multi-sensoriness, right, of kind of how we work. I mean, in my worship classes, there's things we talk about, you know, and you mentioned a book to look at and a playlist to listen to. Sierra, you're talking about a candle, again, something you can see, probably something you can smell. All right. And it has those memory triggers. Well, a couple more things I want to talk about before we go. The last one's going to be kind of a how-to. What are some recommendations that you would give to people? But before we get there, we've talked a lot about entering the sabbatical and being in it, but we haven't talked yet about exiting the sabbatical, which can also be a challenge, right? Because exiting the sabbatical also means re-entering your ministry context. So give us some insight into what that kind of that ending and re-beginning was like for you.
I'm really thankful that last week is back in Memphis and doing that class, and that kind of helped get me thinking about children's ministry again, because I really tried not to think about it. Josh Ross, who's at our church, he talks about the difference between like a study break and a sabbatical, which I think is important, that I'm not trying to go on the sabbatical, then come back with like this new vision for children's ministry or a new curriculum, but I'm really just resting. So I'm not producing things. So I really tried not to think a ton about children's ministry ideas or things like that. But it was nice to have that week to be reminded of the things that I love about children's ministry, what got me excited about it in the first place when I was at ACU, and to network with other children's ministers. So that was really helpful. And then coming back in, my people had lined up all the volunteers for the next several weeks for me. So I wasn't having to come back in and then line up volunteers for the following Sunday. So that was really helpful. And I also had to prep myself. Or I'm kind of more of an introverted person. So I kind of had to prep myself for having the same conversation over and over again about, tell us about your sabbatical. What was it like? Because just all of those conversations. And I wanted like the church, it was a gift from the church. So I wanted to be able to tell people how meaningful it was to me. But when I'm running around on a Sunday morning, it's kind of hard to have all those conversations back to back. So kind of prep myself for how to handle those conversations and share with people what it was like. But my staff and our church was just so gracious to me coming back in and kind of easing me into things. We did have one employee that, or a coworker that was on staff when I left for my sabbatical. And when I got back, he was gone. He'd quit while he was gone, and they were in a search process for somebody else. So that was really startling for me, but it all worked out fine. And one of my coworkers took me to the airport for my big trip, and he gave me a little bit of a heads up about it. So that it wasn't totally shocking getting back. But it was just really strange to, you know, leave on my sabbatical and have this certain coworker around and then get back. He's gone and we're in the middle of hiring somebody else. So that was kind of strange. Yeah. That was probably the hardest part, but everything else flowed pretty smoothly for me.
Okay. Sierra, what about you?
For me, you know, part of your prep work is knowing exactly what you're coming back into. You know, you don't want to be thinking while you're on your sabbatical, oh, here's all the things that are coming up that I've got to do and all this. And so part of your prep work is while you're gone, but when you come back, what does that look like? Do I have those things in place? And so having that, you know, really helped. So I knew exactly what I was coming back into. There was a meeting, you know, like 1 week after, but, you know, I had a volunteer who had already prepped most of that work for me. So it went smoothly. But like what Anna said, there's going to be a lot of changes that happen, you know, with you, with you being gone, you know, and part of that, like me not being in a staff meeting, you know, a lot of things had happened that I had to kind of catch back up on, which was, you know, weird and awkward, I guess, but at the same time, like you have to do that. You can't be in control. You can't be a part of everything. And while, you know, it would have been nice to know a couple of things at the same time, that's protecting you and that you're not part of that. And so that's just, you know, part of it. Some of your prep work is coming into it. And so that's what you have to be, I think, mindful of.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Well, as we're coming to a close, I want to make sure that we are also turning outward to our audience members. So a couple of questions for you. First, for people who are in ministry or church leadership, but don't have any kind of sabbatical in place, like in policy or on the horizon, I want to hear y'all talk about how they can start that conversation. If they're in ministry, how do they start the conversation with the elders? And if they're elders, how do they start it with fellow elders and their ministers, right? This is one that, I mean, Sierra, you've mentioned, like, being willing to start that conversation. So give us some tips. What would you say that folks can do?
You really have to be in a relationship, I think, with your staff and your elders, you know? I think that, I mean, it really, I said it earlier, you know, if you don't have that one person that you're going to for the good, the bad, and the ugly, even the boring and the mundane, like you just need to be going to them and updating them. Like, even if you're like, they don't want to know this kind of information, it's still just part of your relationship. So that, and it's part of your protection too, is how I feel. You know, if something comes up, then there's people who support you that they're like, I don't think Sierra would have, you know, okayed this, you know, I don't think this fits her, what, you know, we've talked about. I think that's really important. And so like the eldership knew my heart. And so that was really helpful. And so I think you do need to be in relationships with them and then your staff members also. You know, I think the staff really knew I was hurting and going through a lot that last year. And so they were understanding and supportive of that because I was open and talking about it. And that's not my personality to want to talk about feelings and things like that, but I was willing to do that with those people that I felt were safe and comfortable with. And so that's going to be what I'm pushing for, is for you to find those safe people that you can talk to about your ministry and what's going on. And so that you can confide in them when things are, because we'll all reach a point where you're really looking at your ministry and, is this what I want to be doing?
Yeah, it makes sense. Thanks. Anna, what about you? What would be some advice that you would want to give?
Yeah, I'm thankful I didn't have to ask for one, because I'm not great at asking for what I need. But when we taught a class at NCYM about sabbatical, somebody brought up, people aren't going to know what they don't know. So if you're not telling people that you need it, then they're not going to know that you need it. So from a minister, I think making sure you have people that can really know where you're at, and not when it's too late, but before you get to that point of needing it really bad. So I think that that's a big thing. There's great articles and resources, which I know you're going to point people to, David, but I think reading from other people's experiences in other churches, and there's a lot of people on our staff that have been here a long time. And I think that's a lot of different reasons, but I think part of that is sabbatical and knowing that that's built into what they get. And so some of them have done like 3 or 4 sabbaticals at this point. So I think there's some proven longevity in that when talking to elders and staff members about why sabbatical would be important. And yeah, I just think it's better to have it in place before you get to the burnout phase. And I think as a young minister, I wish I would have like asked for it at the hiring phase, because that's probably the best time to negotiate for one. So I would encourage people, as they're looking for jobs, ask, like, is that something that you guys do? And if not, is that something I could work into to my contract? And then that might help other people on the staff be able to get it to you. So I think there's a lot of resources out there to point people to, because I know that our elders, they like to have some of the data and some of the facts behind it when making a decision like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's really important, because it's not just a vacation. It's not just taking time up. You know, you are setting aside time with God. You are filling your cup for ministry, because ministry is so give, give, give. But if we're not at a place where we can give, then that's challenging. And so I think it's really important going in when you ask, because I think it is like, I'm with Anna. I wish I had asked for beforehand, and in the, you know, future, if I ever was looking, that would be something, you know, including a day off, which we had those conversations, you know, and different things like that. But those are all important things, and churches, they will never shy away from it. They like when you ask questions. So just make sure that's one of the questions that you ask. I think is really important. One other thing that I want to add is having a minister community around you. You know, I'm really thankful. I have a really good community here in Central Arkansas, but I also had a really good community when I was in Oklahoma of just ministers willing to pour into you, you know? And so I think that's really important, you know, male, female, to have those people that you can go to, because they're going to understand the in and out of ministry a lot better than sometimes maybe your eldership will. And so hearing their different perspectives, I think, is really helpful. So finding that community is really important.
Yeah. And I would imagine that would also be true with, you know, if you're thinking, okay, I feel equipped, I'm ready to have that conversation, but there's this one tricky thing, you know, I've got an elder and this is the situation, or we just had a staff, you know, the last person that took a sabbatical, they left as soon as they got back. And then the church kind of felt burned by that, you know, and just sometimes colleagues in ministry can help you think through, how do I introduce that conversation in light of these particular challenges? Because, you know, whenever any of us is working off of our own ideas, we're going to be limping at best. And so having those supports, I think, is just going to be helpful in all sorts of ways. And hopefully just this conversation is something that, you know, people can share as they hear this and they think, I know somebody that needs to hear it. And so the stuff y'all are sharing today is going to be beneficial, not just directly, but also as people pass that along.
think it's really important. So you mentioned, and it's true, there's some people who go on sabbatical and leave. Like I've heard of different, you know, stories of different people, but I think, you know, they're in a place where they're sitting with God. And so I think that's the risk that some of the eldership is going to have to realize that that could happen. But at the same time, there's a huge benefit there, you know, also. And so I think you just really have to see the benefit of that. Nobody wants to be searching for a minister right now. And so the idea of longevity, I think, is really important.
Yeah. Well, let me just say to both of y'all, thank you so much. It's been great to get to talk to y'all both in getting ready for this and also today. And we just want God to bless your ministries in Memphis at North Little Rock so richly. To a couple of things to our audience, we are going to have in our show notes some of the resources that have been mentioned here. We have some sabbatical things on our Seibert website at seibertinstitute.org/downloads, but I'll make sure that you have titles for the John Mark Comer and the Ruth Haley Barton resources so you can track those down. But one last thing for you guys, Ann and Sierra, if people want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that? Are you on any particular social media platform? Should they just send you an email? What do you think would be best?
I'm on Facebook and Instagram. There's a lot of good children's ministry community things out there on Facebook. So if you're a children's minister and you're not a part of that, please contact me to get in connected with that. My email is sierra.gustafson@levychurch.com.
Okay. And that name, folks, will be in the show notes. You'll see that there. Anna, what about you? How can people get in touch if they want to?
Yeah, I'm also on Facebook and Instagram, Anna Lita Moser on both of those. And you can email me as well at amoser@sycamoreview.org.
All right. Well, thank you all so much. Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our audience, as always, for being here with us. And remember, folks, you can always access all of our podcast episodes at seibertinstitute.podbean.com. Please do share this and others. Please subscribe so that you always get the latest stuff as it comes along. Ann and Sierra, thank you all again so much. And hope to all of you who are listening, may God be with you today.
Thanks for listening today to Live from the Seibert Institute. We would love to connect with you on our social media channels, and you can always find all of our various resources at our website, seibertinstitute.org. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe and follow this podcast on your platform of choice, then share it with your friends. Until next time, may God bless you in all that you do.